The following program may contain content not suitable for all audiences. Welcome to Metagamers Anonymous, a program dedicated to tabletop role-playing games and mostly related material, presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric.
I'm Brian.
I'm Brendan.
And I'm the kid.
Or so you say.
You wouldn't know.
Welcome to episode number 296 of this here show. You guys remember this show? I'm talking to listeners, not you guys. You guys probably don't remember this show. This is the one that we started back. I looked it up like 2000. I forgot. I looked it up and then I forgot. 2012, I think it was. Yeah, it's April 2012. So we're, but this is what our, we just done finished 12 years of Metagamers Anonymous. But it's hard to really kind of celebrate it when you can't get a fucking show out more than once every couple months. So there you go. You know, anybody waiting on Expo Street will know the pain as well, because we've still been recording them, but it takes time to produce them and post them. And that bullshit, and it hadn't been happening. And I do apologize for that. Thank you so much for hanging in there. And we're going to try to get things rolling on the regular a little bit. But to celebrate my ineptitude, I decided to invite a few people that were just on hand tonight, because I've been gaming with them this week, been gaming with them recently. And I'm so bad about not planning shit with our regulars, whom I see several times a week, that it just, like, I kind of felt bad, you know, hitting people out of the blue and going, hey, you want to do this? You want to do this? But I was pretty sure I knew Brian had his Friday evening free, and I was pretty sure I could talk Brendan into dropping in regardless. For those who don't know, Brendan, he's my brother. He's you ever been on the show before? I don't remember.
Maybe several years ago.
I was having this weird moment where I was thinking, at some point, I think I talked to you on the show, but I went looking, and I mean, it's a big catalog of programs, you know, 295 previous episodes. I could not find it, but I only got through maybe about half of them.
I remember the topic.
Oh, what was the topic?
Conspiracy theories.
Oh, well, that'd make it a little easier, actually. Yeah. I've actually got a episode guide that has most of them. I occasionally will post it again for people to find if they want it on our website. And it has like most of them listed by like the title, the top, the episode number, the date that it was posted, and the topic. And then the title has a link to the actual website episode. Fucking clever, right?
Yeah.
Except I've got to know what I'm looking for, because it's several pages long now. But now I know. I have to go look. I tell you what, the reason I was looking is because I had this weird moment. Like, and okay, let's hit everybody right in the feels. Okay, you ready? So, somebody close to me went through a death in the family very recently, and we've been talking about it a lot. And so it got me thinking about something I had thought about a little while back. I remembered thinking that, and I think it was maybe a show that I was watching or something, where somebody had a recording. It was a radio thing. Somebody had a recording of their father as a radio guy. And it's like, oh, that's right. They actually have recordings of their dad years later. Like, you know what? I don't think there's a single bit of video or audio or anything I have of my father, who wouldn't have actually been shy about those things. I just don't think there's anything that survived to this day that I can think of that I could revisit.
I can't think of anything either.
But then I thought, I think I recorded an episode with my mom once. I think there was an episode where just she and I sat down, but I can't fucking find it. And it's pissing me off. Maybe it never got posted. Maybe I'm imagining things. Maybe it was something I intended to do. But I honestly feel like I remember sitting down and having a conversation with her at the mics, just the two of us, because she was a gamer in my table for years. I mean, and she was an amazing role player. She was there during the period of discovery for us, where we kind of graduated from, you know, let's compare numbers, let's roll die and compare numbers, and talk about what that did for us, to thou art in my face, foul demon, you know, to what we have today, which is a little more of that, but without all the dramatic Shakespearean flair. Now we're all assholes. It's fantastic. So you've got to kind of imagine it. You got to wrap your head around it. I mean, we don't have time to go through the whole thing, but it was the period of discovering immersive role playing and what it was all about. And my mother our mother was one of the early kind of character actors in our group at the time. If you don't qualify, if you don't count, like, you know, the kid.
Thank you. But,
yeah. Honorable mention.
I appreciate it. It's nice to be remembered.
There's an interesting thing.
I still remember a lot of your role playing years ago. You were always really good.
Well, thank you.
Brendan's last real campaign when we were younger was kid's first real campaign in my group.
Yes. And I
pretty close. We had one that ran for like a, like 8 or 9 weeks before that.
Yeah, we all know that one didn't count. You
know, no, it was silly. So let's take a thought. Let's not go there. It's very silly. yeah, no, it was it was quite the turning point in our gaming careers.
Well, I came from
that's what bringing it up.
I came from a very different gaming background than the rest of you too.
Right.
So well, I didn't really know what I was getting into with you guys, to be honest.
You didn't care, obviously. That's very clear.
That's true. The most important part was that playing D&D was a way to defy my parents, so I was going to play D&D, goddammit.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, I mean, we all knew your parents. it's all good. I mean, I know I've talked about on the show some stuff, and it'd be... No disservice to kind of tromp over some of those grounds again. But the important thing is that you definitely brought a style of role playing with you that was different than what we were used to. And if it was a little overly dramatic, it was also very very colorful and very character driven. And it kind of gave us pause. It gave us a different way to kind of examine the gaming experience and redefine it for ourselves. And that's the game that Brendan kind of like noped out on. But not, I don't think it had anything to do with that. I think he got
to do with motorcycles.
Yeah, he got cool or some shit. It was really confusing at the time.
Left that in my 20s.
Well, it's like, and then like a year later, you quit the band, and I think that was girls.
Chicks, man.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense. That was seen backwards somehow. I thought you were supposed to do the band and then get the chicks. Oh, that's why it never worked for me.
I'm a drummer. That doesn't work for me.
No. It's a very different thing.
I was tattooing a dude who was 79 years old today, and we were talking about it. It was very, very same thing.
Nice. I really want to recognize, though, that all three of you have had a, if not recent in some cases, very impactful role in my personal development as a gamer and as a game master in different ways. I mean, Brendan was there for a lot of the early years of me figuring out the gaming and had to be my guinea pig or victim, however you want to look at it, for a lot of that.
There was a lot of that,
Jason brought a sensibility to our game table that was very different than anything we had before. And Brian made it fun, which was so fucking weird. I mean, I was
boring
so,
before then.
God, I was so dramatic.
The dark time.
Everything was everything was so dramatic. It's like, and we had to do a lot of angry acting, and it was really great. But Brian's one, he does most of it either in character or absolutely divorced from it. You know, there's no kind of middle ground, right?
Right. Like,
so you're not trying to suspend disbelief, you know, or you're not breaking suspension of disbelief, rather.
Right. Like, process. I don't usually make jokes in character. And like, if I'm making a joke, it's my character making.
Right. Well, most of the time, your characters aren't that funny.
Right.
Ironically. and your audience, you have a tendency to focus on when you're funny, you're just because you're comfortable with the people you're around and you like entertaining people. You like, you know, it's what makes you a performer. It's what made you a good radio guy. It's what makes you good at, you know, just, you know, when you're comfortable with the group you're with, just kind of gelling, you know, it's their audience is everybody else. You like everybody having a good time. And that's always, you know, we talked about that before. It's always shown through, you know, in your presence at the table.
Like my current character, that Tortle I'm playing, he's going to be a funny character, but he's not intentionally funny.
Well, he doesn't probably think of himself as funny.
Exactly. I think that's funny.
Oh, God.
Jonica was fucking losing it.
I need to get my act together and get character a little bit because that's too good.
The real magic actually happened when Brian and Justin first started playing in the same game together, because that was a whole new world of entertainment in so many ways. Those two just like combined and formed a hyper role player.
If you survived the fucking session.
The Voltron of role-playing.
Currently trying to figure out how Olmec is going to sound if someone casts haste on him.
Oh, dude. I want to see... I want to see more of that. I really do. I'm so glad we're getting a chance to game with Justin right now again. We are running one of my weekly games. One of my bi-weekly, more like month and a halfly games is a Cyberpunk Savage Worlds game that Brendan and Brian are in with Justin and Nira, my oldest. Oh my that is a great group. And wouldn't you say that's a good group to be doing this with, Brendan?
Really
kind of invest with?
Yeah.
Nero's an excellent role player. Justin is just, he's a powerhouse. Anybody that's ever listened to our actual play stuff knows, because we're talking about the dude that brought us Lee Deckard, the guy that brought us Daniel Mortluck. He is a ridiculous character actor, and he brings so much to the table and just drags everybody else into it with him.
Kicking and or screaming are voluntary.
Absolutely.
I like gaming with Justin. He's easy to... Like Jason said, we feed off each other. We do really good. I feel like we do pretty good improv.
The two of you,
Cannibal Pete's.
What was your character's name, Brian?
Which one?
I'm talking about Bash.
Oh, Dimitriax.
Dimitriax. Bash and Dimitriax was the most awe-inspiring comedic duo I have ever seen in any game anywhere of all time. It was incredible.
Demi wasn't even funny.
He was the straight man to Bash's humor, and Bash wasn't funny either, except for the fact that he was hilarious.
That's a really good
song
example
about the bat.
Yep, smash that fucker flat. So what I was thinking about, we could talk about it a little bit, and I mean we can kind of wander and meander into it, if you will, but I'm sure getting back into role playing after so long, Brennan, you had apprehensions about getting into it and figuring out what it was going to be like for you. Now, I'm sure that by the time you decided you were going to do it, you weren't that worried about how it came off or anything. It was just the fun of doing it.
No, yeah. And I could even go way deep into like the way my life has been working out over the past several years that led up to that, too.
We don't need to hear your woman problems. Not on Metagamers Anonymous. We'll have another podcast for that.
But it was just a, like coming back to myself sort of scenario where I decided it. Do all the things that I've been talking about doing for so long. And it's just one of those.
Well, the funny thing is you came down a couple times when we had Tsunami Con over at the Scottish Rite and helped out with the con. You just came down to hang out with the family. I mean, mom was there for one or two of them as well. Came out, hung out, helped me, propped me upright and acted as a gopher the year that I wasn't even sure what was going on around me.
Right.
That whole year is a blur. I'm pretty sure I was a stud. I know I did great things. And there's a recording of me playing guitar with Mikey, and I hit some of the notes right. But, man, I don't remember any of it. It was all a blur. But
immediate abrupt chaos.
But you came out, helped out, and you never played any games.
No, and that was like, I was pretty intimidated, really, because all of the people that I'd grown up with and gamed with back, several years ago are like we were just talking about. Like, you guys were amazing at everything. And I always felt like I was tailing behind due to, like, details. And, I'm not super detail-oriented.
Well, in terms
of, like, rolling character sheets or keeping track of numbers and things like that. But
I don't like to brag.
Everybody's known me long enough now.
This is the Black Plague. Had a pretty good time.
You all kind of pick up the pieces for me a little bit and help me out. So it's a little less intimidating. And I've known you guys.
At the time, it probably didn't seem strange to me. I didn't get to game either. Yeah, I was running a convention. So never even would have occurred to me. But this year, you decided to.
I was going to say, don't sell yourself short there either, Brendan, because I still remember your character from the game that I met you in. Spider. Inspirational to me on multiple levels. I actually kind of stole some shit from you in later years for other characters that I played. You definitely had your own unique elements that you brought to the game, and I noticed them.
Yeah, that I mean, I actually just found a photo of that entire campaign on, like, I think my Facebook or something. It was all of it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, one of the pictures from the basement or one of the pictures in the field.
It was the field, yeah.
Yeah, where we were outstanding in our field. So terrible.
Yeah, that was a fun campaign, man.
It really
good
was.
Good times.
I remember it fondly, and I don't remember anything from back then.
Right, yeah.
That's good that you have some fond memories, then.
I know, I wasn't there. I didn't start gaming with you guys until after Brendan was doing other stuff.
Right. Well, but you guys knew each other from school or some shit.
Yeah.
Because you and Justin were all about the same age, right? So
I met Justin in sixth grade, I think.
That's because you live in the same neighborhood, too. So same school.
Yeah, we were like this, two blocks or a block and a half away from each other or something like that.
And another, and about two more blocks from the school, right?
Yeah.
It was nothing, yeah. My my ex-mother-in-law was a teacher there, as I recall. A sixth grade teacher. Wait a minute.
Not unless she was very manly.
No.
She was Mr. York.
She was the one, the teacher that everybody apparently was scared of, the older school marm type. But she was the nicest, kindest, least judgmental woman I'd ever met in my life.
I went to sixth grade.
Weird.
In the
Baker. Ooh.
That's a very Midwest statement.
I hate to tell you this, Brian, but that wasn't a school.
Oh, I'm glad you escaped.
did they ask you to drink the Kool-Aid? Yeah. Was it sugar-free? Because that's the real thing.
There were too many kids in Dodge City, and at the time they didn't have the money to build another school, so they like rented out the basement of the Methodist Church, I think, up near Northwest School, but on that whatever street that was. Anyway, there was like five or six classrooms in there, so they ended up sending a bunch of kids up there.
So I was thinking about having a conversation about role playing and getting back into it after so much time. Because
why don't we have a conversation about having a conversation about getting back into role?
I was just thinking we might do that. I don't like to rush into anything.
Well, we could have a conversation about you thinking about us having a conversation about us having a conversation about getting back into role playing.
That reminds me of the time that I had a thought about having a conversation about thinking about having an opportunity to record a podcast, which how we eventually got to this episode. Thank you very much. Now sit your ass down and let me talk. All know that the reason I do this is to hear the sound of my own goddamn voice.
That's not one of my better skills, you know.
Hey, man.
That's fair.
At least you're honest with your ego.
I'm married. I have no choice. Everybody here and most of the listening audience know my wife.
She has one job on this ship, and it's keeping Eric humble.
Yep, that is the truth. Real quick, I want to mention, for those of you who have not picked up on it yet, we are having another TsunamiCon this year. This will be our 11th annual, our 11th year doing this event. TsunamiCon, what?
You're having your yearly event this year?
I'm having our yearly event this year. Hey, that's never a sure thing, goddammit.
That's true.
Don't pick on me. Thank you very much. TsunamiCon is happening December 6th through 8th. We put it off to the holidays this year.
Excuse me.
We're gonna try this and see how it goes. I've got us another spot at the hotel we were at the year before last, at the Broadview Hotel in downtown Wichita, the Drury, right across from Century 2. It's a lovely hotel, really great place to stay. And the housing block is now open if you want to get your rooms now. So far, the only tickets I've had available online have been VIG tickets. So don't think that you're behind or anything. I've had some early VIGs available to kind of help with our fundraising, and we will probably be doing a Kickstarter soon. I will let everybody know what to keep an eye out for and when. And we'll make that happen. So that'll be a lot of fun. Once again, that's coming December 6th through 8th. I just got Mikey's confirmation a couple of days ago. So we weren't sure. Excellent. Moving into December, we couldn't be sure because we've always been, or almost always been, an October convention, you know, and he's been with us almost every year since we started. So it was really kind of a big deal to make it sure work, but Mikey Mason is planning to be there.
Mikey Mason, he's such a swell guy.
I have that in text.
Solid dude.
And he really is. I got to play him one of his games, and it was just absolutely.
Did you? Oh,
wow.
Badass.
Yeah, it was incredible. I loved it.
So here's the thing that happened, what I was talking about, I was alluding to, is Brendan came to the convention last year, which that one was in October, and decided this time he wanted a game. And so he asked me ahead of time, he said, so can you think you can find me a good game to get into? And I'm like, well, it just so happens Justin had listed a game like the day before he asked. And like, it was a, Kids on Bikes. He's running two of them. He's running Kids on Bikes, Kids on Brooms. It's an indie game. It's a cool system. Very kind of like Goonies / Stranger Things kind of vibe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Basically. And so I was like, I've got to let Brendan know. And so I promptly signed you up for the game and then called you to let you know you were in a game. And turned around and texted Brian. Bro. Because I've spent years trying to get him to come out and spend time at the convention. And, you know, Brian loves gaming. He just doesn't particularly, like, you know,
people. Dig
or understand probably the whole. There's a whole bunch of people here I don't know. Why do I want to do this?
People.
Kid, you understand that.
Yeah.
We all suffer through it, too.
I've gotten a lot worse about it lately.
But the GameCon is still a great place to kind of exercise those demons a little bit, because you can still seek out the opportunities to game with the people that you know.
Brother, my demons don't need any more exercise.
they are fit. Fuck.
So, seriously, though, I mean, you guys had a great time at that game.
Yeah, it was right. Fun. And there were, it was a game with, there was one guy that I didn't know, and he was fine. He wasn't like he didn't have like a third eye or a second head or anything. So it was.
Was Ken in that one too?
Ken, and then there was another Brian.
A dude that Justin.
Yeah, that was from his color, his Delta Green game, one of his Delta Green players.
Right, yeah.
All of them, really nice people, really nice guys. It was really a really fun game and it was fun to go out, and because I haven't sat at an actual physical table and gamed in a long, long, long time.
we don't do a lot of that. It's not so much
gaming
a thing.
Room far, far away.
So that was my first game, actually, and I got to do it with Justin as a GM and, you know, two of my oldest fucking friends. Pretty great.
It was a fun game.
Yeah. And then after that, I know Brendan hung out with Gabriel and.
Yeah, we did the Dungeon Doom.
Yep.
Oh, sweet.
I saw Doug a couple weeks ago.
Did not last long.
I saw Doug a couple weeks ago at Midwest Game Fest. And for the first time, I sat down into Dungeon of Doom with Gabriel, and I died many, 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 many times. I mean, we played for like 45 minutes.
It doesn't take long.
The name is not a lie.
And we skipped the cemetery.
Oh, dude. I couldn't do that. Not enough people had played before us to get far enough to do the skip. Because that's the way they do it. Somebody has to pass a certain checkpoint. It's like playing fucking Halo or something. So we were stuck at the cemetery the whole time. I just, an hour went by and like we couldn't get out of the goddamn graveyard.
I think we got like 10 feet down the hallway.
And you're dead.
There were spiders everywhere. I don't know what
happened. We kept dealing with undead.
Open the door.
Pissing me off. Dead. And the first thing we ran into was a Dread Gazebo.
Oh, good Lord.
Who knew?
There's a great opening move for you.
Well, to be fair, the Dungeon of Doom isn't intended for you to survive, so that's fine.
Like I said, the name is not a lie.
So these guys, they set up this 3D terrain, like tables and tables long dungeon, right? And they can play it from both ends at once. They have like a few, three or four or five guys doing GMing, you know, that can sit down doing with any number of people that sit down to play. I mean, within reason, obviously. And then you get into the dungeon, you start through, and when you die, they have like a bone-shaped hole punch. Did they have that when you were doing it? Like a punch, and then they would punch like a bone out of your character sheet, because that character sheet would get used by other people. And everybody's character sheet is a different color, right? So there's your color of bone. Mine was a mage and he was on like a pink sheet or something. So a trail of pink bones all over this side of the fucking graveyard. It was great. We had such a good time. And
a trail of pink bones.
Gabriel and I had a lot of fun. And that's the first time Gabriel and I have ever sat down and gamed beside each other. I mean, because I've always been the GM, you know, for whatever we're doing with Gabe. So that was a lot of fun. And then the next day we decided, you know what, we're here. And Justin and Nira and Brian and Brendan and I sat down and played this Savage Cyberpunk game.
Oh, wow.
That we just kind of like rolled out through the day in little bits and pieces because I was busy running a con, but we had a good time. It was on Sunday. It was a little easier to get away with. And it started us up. It set us up with the kind of the scenario to start this campaign. So now we've had like five, six more sessions since. Mm-hmm. Four or five more sessions. I don't know. Five sessions total, I think. And it's been a blast. I'm enjoying it. I have to apologize this week for forgetting how the fuck to run a chase in Fantasy Grounds, apparently. So you guys had to sit there and wait for 45 minutes while I screamed at my computer in Russian or something. I have no idea what was going through my head at that point. I was so frothing pissed about not being able to figure out why the hell I couldn't make the goddamn thing do what I wanted it to do and jump through the hoop I wanted to jump through. And then when I figured it out, I felt stupid. But mostly for, making you guys wait. Everybody's so patient. I'm sitting there thinking, this is some top-notch GMing right here. This is the guy that runs games that are so fluid and immersive that you get to the point where nobody knows how the hell to do the rules. You guys just wait, okay? You sit there on your hands for an hour, and I will figure this shit out, okay? Yeah. I'm a goddamn professional. I'll have you know.
You ordered Cannibal Pete.
What's that?
You ordered Cannibal Pete.
Ugh. You ordered Cannibal Pete's. Yeah.
Terrible eyeballs.
Oh, dear. People. Yeah. So, what do you think of that game so far, Brian?
Me? I think I like it.
Me?
Brendan?
You.
I've been playing Cyberpunk off and on over the past year or so. Yeah. And I'm still building the whole thing in my head as we're playing. But it's, I don't know if it's the game itself that really lent this to me, but I always try to play to the character's uses. That's where that garage scene came from.
Right. Yeah. With the setting off the halide and all that stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't good to go in there blasting.
That's a really interesting point, too, because it is so common, particularly with D&D players, because D&D, I will come right up and say that I can run I often run D&D and many other systems any way I fucking feel like making that game go. So we play plenty of games in D&D that are not combat focused games. Plenty of sessions where nobody has to touch a die. Nobody's bitching. But D&D is at its core a violent fucking game. I mean, that is what it is. It is a beating the hell out of the other guy kind of game. That's what it's built on.
It's really, really the only thing there's a system for is...
Right. I mean
it's violence.
It's a little wibbly wobbly in other areas. Yeah, it's not really much of a game.
Is it that violent? No.
Never. There's no such thing. You can't be violent enough.
I haven't
enough.
Seen any of the things for like dismemberment tables in 5e. Maybe I haven't played a lot of it yet, but where is the thing for
Rift Shadow the Demon Lord? Let's do that.
Well, that's different.
Or even some Dungeon Crawl classics might have some of that. I don't know. There's all kinds of other games that are all about chopping up characters. That's the way it works, right? Any game where you have a funnel.
Yeah.
You know? Mikey ran DCC 1 year at the con and started like, he said, get me like 20, 30 players and we'll just see who survives. It's like, fantastic. But yeah, no, my point was that when you have a new player come into the game, people tend to, especially as D&D players, be focused on, I don't want to say generic, but kind of the lowest common denominator in combat situations. You know, it's like, oh, we're in a fight. What do I do in a fight? You know, so you look at your weapons, you look at your options, you think in terms of like, but so this was a game where it was really neat to see you come in, Brendan, and think in terms of like, what do I do as a person? Because I don't necessarily want to get in a fight.
Right. Am I going to try to make the GM kill me right now?
Which is funny because you like the action. You obviously like the action.
Oh, yeah. But like Brian and I were talking earlier about first person shooters versus puzzle games in terms of video games. And these days I prefer puzzles anyways. And that to me, that sort of thing is more like a puzzle than just blasted folks.
And your character's cool. He's a rigger, basically. He's very oriented on hardware and he's a wheelman. We even got to do some driving this session. I mean, really driving for the first time. You know, that chase that it took me an hour to get rolling actually did get played out. And I mean, that part only took 12 minutes once I had it figured out. But because you guys didn't exactly. It's like, I was like, oh, you know, for as much trouble I've been put into this, I should have brought like 18 more enemies. Give me a minute, guys. But by then, I wasn't going to do that. It felt pretty chintzy. It's like,
we mopped them up pretty quick.
I didn't
quick.
Realize it was going to be so easy.
Didn't take long.
But it was about bad die rolls on my part. I couldn't roll anything above a 1 to save my life.
So you were having my kind of luck, I see.
Oh, absolutely. It was phenomenal. It was a great game. I don't necessarily know what I expected starting that game. There's a thing that happens whenever I do this. Whenever I throw out there, people say, what kind of game you want to run? And I get to, I say, you guys decide. You let me know. That's shooting craps just a little bit because there's as much a chance that people are going to come back at me with something that feels natural to me and I can really kind of sink my teeth into as something that I'm constantly trying to figure out what the hell do they do in this genre? You know, I was so surprised that that zombie game I ran, the Project Z game that's on our actual play series, the first one we did was so successful because the zombie game was what everybody picked, and that was not something I had a lot of experience trying to figure out what to do with it, because the zombie game is basically a survival game. You know
who's good at running zombie games, right? Brian, I will never forget your zombie game.
I'm glad I did.
It was an episode of Red Shift.
He's talking about the Red Shift game.
Oh, that one.
The kid in the trunk and
yeah.
shit.
I forgot. Yeah, I'm glad you're. I forgot all about that until right now.
Yeah, no, actually, now you mentioned it, that was actually a blast.
It was amazing.
You definitely had a feel for it. Did everything that people do in a zombie movie that you're like, no one would do that in real life. No one.
I still remember you saying that you guys have devolved into the people from the zombie movies.
I especially love the part where you went into the gas station and you heard this thump, thump, thump against the bathroom door, and you're like,
it may be a survivor. We need to rescue them.
Fucking people are like, we should check it out. And I'm like, all right, Scooby-Doo, go for it. I'm like, seriously, there are dead people walking all around. You just saw a little girl jump at you from a fucking back of a trunk that tried to chew your eyeballs out. But you think there might be someone in trouble. All right, hero, do it.
Yeah, I'd say let it burn, whatever.
It was ridiculous. Oh, that
was, it was so much fun. Dude.
My favorite one of that was when it was my turn to do it, and I had y'all shift into I called them the Croath, but they were basically like interdimensional aliens, and they had caught you and put you all in a simulation of a mental institute and tried to convince you that you were all insane, and then they were trying to find the location of Earth Prime.
That was awesome. You did. That was impressive.
So that was kind of a cool.
You did an incredible job.
We talked about it on the show before, I've talked about it on the show before. It's been a number of years. But that was the three of us, pretty much. Brian, Jason, and I that cooked that up. It was a dimension hopping game. I mean, we were taking inspiration from things like Sliders.
Yeah.
You know,
and like every week we would rotate.
Quantum Leap.
And we rotate, we were round robin jamming it. So, I mean, the only rule was I decided out of the gate, let me do the first session. And I've got some meta plot ideas that I want to keep from you guys. There's some surprise here so we can do a big finale that I've got in mind too. Otherwise, though, you guys make your own decisions about what your world is. And every session had to end with a leap out. So the characters had gotten possession of this alien artifact, and they would have this adventure. And then at the end of the session, it would leap away. You know, the artifact would operate and everybody would just zap into the artifact. And then they would end up
shifting.
Yeah. And then they would end up shifting into a new dimension. And we had our own kind of internal rules about how that worked. Like every dimension was technically the same. It was technically Earth 1996. I don't know what it was.
Whatever year it was, we were doing that.
Right. Actually, I guess early 2000s, but still, it was right there at the end of the 20th century. And but the premise was that something somewhere in the past, at some point, it could be recent, it could be a long ways back, had changed enough that the entire world was affected by it. So every DM just kind of had to work from that forward, and we just went fucking bonkers. I mean, our worlds were very different.
Yeah, they were.
I mean,
I still remember Brian taking a selfie of him with the goddess Kali.
Kali the Destroyer.
Oh, and me.
Yeah. Kali the Destroyer. Yeah, yeah. So
here's the goddess Kali.
Because I was playing
here's
this
me and
IT
the goddess
guy
Kali.
From...
Here's Elijah fighting the goddess Kali.
I was playing some IT guy like from the office and like the only
equipment. And you still had power your cell phone.
Yeah, the only equipment I had that worked was my cell phone for whatever reason and the camera, and that was it. So I kept snapping pictures of the most unbelievable shit.
It was the first time, because we were D&D guys, and we didn't do a lot of other kinds of gaming during that period. We hadn't really gotten into a lot of other kinds of gaming yet. It was the first time we had a game where we were making Star Trek references in character. It was bizarre.
It really was.
My character, since I ran the first session and shifted them out at the end of the session, because mine took place on Earth, them getting a hold of the artifact and all this, and everything happening. Brian ran the next... Was it Brian? Brian ran the next session, I think.
Yeah,
the
then water you world. Zoom into basically Waterworld.
Yeah.
Waterworld meets Mad Max.
So my PC had to come from his setting.
Oh, yeah.
So
and you were like...
he had to tell me a little about what he had in mind. I took inspiration from the Grammaton Clerics from Equilibrium, if you've ever seen it. That's a movie we definitely have got to do for Expo Street.
Exposition Street. I've called it out a couple of times, but
Equilibrium
it's still on our
is so
list.
Good. Have you ever seen that one, Brendan?
Long time ago.
You remember it was Christian Bale, I think it was in it. Remember his character?
Yeah.
With the gun caudas and everything. Well, no, I didn't use a gun, but it was still the same style of character and had very kind of like weirdly like perverted religious overtones. You know, I would like quote scripture, but I would pervert it somehow, you know, and say things and like right, they right. meant something completely different. It was fun. And
interesting.
I remember Dennis actually, our Our friend Dennis played a character that's from that world as well, because he couldn't make it to the first session. And he made a character who had values and stuff that were informed by that religion and that society. And so he was very different. And
wait,
and stuff.
Dennis was in that game?
And stuff. Yep.
Because it was a D20 modern game.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
D20 modern was like a new thing.
We had yet to discover the joys of Savage Worlds because I don't think it was around yet. I don't remember. D20 Modern would have been like early 2000s, actually.
Yeah.
It actually puts it in its time frame a little better.
Justin was in that game, and
he joined us. Yeah,
and we treated it. It was very much like we treated each session like a TV show episode.
Called them episodes.
And we ended it, and I think we did two seasons.
Yes, we had season finales and everything.
Total of 25 episodes between the two seasons. There was it was 15 in the first season and like 9 in the second or something like that.
Some say the writing
it was fabulous
in the second season.
The last few episodes made up for it. Come on.
The show got canceled.
It was crazy. It was crazy. But I mean, it was also, like I said, it was very experimental for us because we'd never run a game. Not only we'd never run a game like that, we really hadn't done much other than D&D and like some World of Darkness and Rifts a little bit in the 90s. It just wasn't, It wasn't a thing we did. So it was a really cool experience and very memorable because of that. And that round robin GMing thing we did, I mean, I've never tried that again with anybody else who considered it. That's a very interesting challenge we gave ourselves. And it didn't always work well.
No, but when it did, it was pretty glorious.
We also gave other players a chance to kind of run a session here and there, too.
Yeah, we did.
That was also part of the fun, too.
Cut their teeth. Unfortunately, I think we even gave Dennis one, as I recall.
And stuff. And yeah, he did. He had kind of like a Gamma World kind of flavor, I think, on that one. That was conveniently the session in which Julie and I had tickets to the musical theater, dinner theater. It's like, and I did not tell everybody that until like the day before.
Yeah, you missed out, man.
I know.
That was something.
I know. But we,
And I do mean something.
We,
I don't know what.
I'm really glad we did that, though, because it gave me a lot of fodder for how to approach games later on. And that kind of television approach was very successful for me in a lot of games.
Remember, wasn't Justin's session like we ended up in like this interdimensional mall that had the bad guys from every fucking game, every session in it?
No, that was mine.
Was that yours?
Well, that's one we shared.
That was a lore episode.
That was the Olympus Station stuff where like you and I think all three of us or all four of us, or like several of us actually had stations that kept coming back there.
Yeah.
But the Justin's first session was aboard a ship, though. It was like the first one that was like, oh, it's Earth in the year whatever, but the Earth is no longer there.
Right.
So you're on a spaceship that just happens to be in about the proximity where Earth used to be. It's like, holy crap, dude.
Yeah, it was a fun game.
Yeah, I mean, I did want to avoid making this a podcast episode that was all just reminiscing about shit that other people had no idea what the hell we're talking about. But so as a player coming back into the game, Brennan, if you had to come up with like a couple of questions, you don't have to off the top of your head, but does anything come to mind? Right. You know, it's like, because I'm sure there was some kind of like trying to figure out how to embrace this or how to get your head in the game, so to speak. We obviously have a very story-driven kind of approach to gaming, very character-driven kind of approach to our games. It's less about the player agency, the character agency is very important, but it's about being part of something bigger in a lot of ways. And even then, the character experience, it's like, I remember looking up tips one time on how to get more immersed in the game. And I remember this conversation where it was talking about, or this recommendation where it was talking about how, you know, speak from the point of view of your character. But it said, the next sentence was try to avoid using, what do they call the pronoun? That's the I, you know, don't use I.
Oh yeah.
Talk about what your character is doing though, with what their behavior is in mind and how it, where it comes from. And I'm like, don't use I am confused.
That is a little like trying to take it out of your
And I wonder if it's because sort of most people are most people. I wonder if it's because a lot of players would never be comfortable with role playing from the context of I am, it's what is my motivation, director, and scene,
right.
who am I? Why am I this person? What am I saying?
Right. And I would say that I'm not. That's not the direction that I started with. Mine was more of a utilitarian, that what am I capable of and what are my limitations? And it sort of started there and sort of work out from I'm still trying to evolve myself more in actual role playing or being in character and conversing in character.
But you do it.
But I will say I focus more on the functionality of that character to try to get a feel for how I would behave or how my character would behave.
What do you guys think of that? If you're trying to give advice to somebody who's just kind of getting into it, that approach seems pretty solid.
I mean, I'm a character actor. I'm living inside my character's head all the time.
I mean, I have to, the way you're describing it, I just found it kind of humorous because all I could think of is someone who's like role playing in the third person. You know, Olmec is acting angry. Olmec is attacking now. Olmec is happy. Olmec is sacrificing innocence to Tubro.
You're not the narrator of your character.
No, but you can be. And that's perfectly all right.
That is part of it. Yeah.
Now, if you do it the way Brian just said it, you might just get nothing but funny looks at our table because everybody would be wondering what Olmec was smoking because Olmec was really going off the deep end over here.
Olmec, would you lose a fucking pronoun? God damn.
Yeah, I would say, Brian, you seem to approach your role playing like a separate personality.
Yeah.
And you flicker back and forth, and I think it's pretty cool.
There's a lot of rooms in my head.
Right.
Well, it helps when you're playing
some
characters.
Some of them are more interesting than others.
It helps when you're playing characters who are exaggerated in a way. And in both the games you're in with Brian right now, he's definitely exaggerating. Kane is a serious exaggeration.
Oh my gosh,
guy.
The one in the cyberpunk game.
Yes.
I mean, Kane is very one-dimensional. And
he's a street samurai. He's just like in your face.
And he's inspired by, I mean, he's a ripoff. he's inspired by a bunch of actual characters in real life. Like I can't do the voice, but you know, for the voice, if anybody watches Invincible, I always imagine the guy, the actor who voices Rex Splode as the,
Lord.
Watch it. So you know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. I hate that guy.
I always imagine that Kane sounds exactly like Rex Splode, this kind of gradient.
That tells me everything I need to know about the character there.
And also that sort of like arrogant, like I'm a bad motherfucker. And also not real bright. He's a street samurai corpo type who, you know, thinks with his fists, or more accurately, the adamantine razor, you know, the Wolverine claws that he's got and the machine gun that can pop out of his arm.
Now, until you got to that last part, you could have been describing Zap Brannigan. I'm just saying. there's a different ways to approach
that's
this.
A good point. I mean, Zap Brannigan's that same kind of a, you know, Kane. How often in that
blustery
game has Kane
heart.
Done something like, you know, like my favorite one was when the first session we're in Nira's character's bar, Mrs. V, and we get, and you know, these street toughs, we end up getting in a fight. It's pretty much Kane's fault that we get in a fight. I break out the frag grenades and destroy the bar, and I blow up her bar, and after it's all done, I'm like, motherfucker, can you believe they made that happen? I cannot believe they blew up your bar. Look at what they did. You motherfuckers blew up Mrs. V's bar. Those sons of bitches. I hope you're insured, Mrs. V. I can't believe they did that to you.
Yeah. I got them for you.
I got them, though. They're dead. You can thank me later.
You can thank me later.
In the meantime, do you have any bacon? I am so hungry.
He spends a lot of time eating. He's getting a sandwich.
And then as we continue to play, you know, and people are talking, like, I could do that, but, you know.
Right.
You want a sandwich?
But that, you know, it helps that, you know, Brian's a performer. I mean, so that's his element.
Yeah.
You know, the approach is very much like the fun of the character, and the elocution of the character comes from there too. Kane and Olmec are very good examples of how this works from different, you know, polarities because.
Yeah, you guys don't really know a lot about the group. Like I said, you've just heard him talk kind of slowly, but he's actually a very serious character.
We haven't really met him yet.
Yeah.
He's a serious and a weird character, but
he doesn't seem to try to be funny. He just
because he's a weird looking turtle thing that talks like a, you know, I've got different inspirations, but the one thing that stood out in my mind when I was creating that character is I was like, he has to move slow. He has to be, did you ever see, was it Zootopia? Do you remember when they go to the DMV and the sloth is like, eh.
Yeah.
I'm like, that. He moves like that. He moves like that sloth.
Perfect.
God. I, so one of the things you do then is you look for inspirations of portrayal in other characters.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you're mentioning a lot of animated stuff, because that's where a lot of great voice work comes in, where, you know,
yeah,
a lot of the exaggeration comes in the animation. But that's an interesting point. It's one of the ways that I've often approached characters in the past is I'll look at, and I'll do it a lot with actors, because a lot of times actors, they play various characters over the course of there's similarities in their deliveries. You know, good character actors, a lot of times their delivery is still peculiar to them. You know, I remember Brian once playing a character who was very heavily inspired by Captain Jack Sparrow, for example, in a Freeport game. It's like you have that drunken pirate thing going on.
I do vaguely remember that. I played so many characters. Some of them, like, I have a handful that, like, you know, the ones that I remember, like Taloon is one of my favorite characters. He wasn't really inspired by anything in particular.
Right. His campaign character.
He was one of my favorites of your characters.
Very lazy. Didn't walk anywhere once he learned how to fly.
I just go.
I was really fond of those characters in that game. That was our first truly epic campaign, wasn't it? The one that Taloon was in.
With you guys, I would say it is. It was the one that we went for 4 years. Right at about 4 years, as it turned out. And I remember how momentous that was. I'll always stay with me, because that last session that I'd been building towards forever was this epic, ridiculous combat with the dragon that was the ancient red dragon that was the principal villain of the campaign. And when you guys brought him down, there was so much hooting and hollering at the table. And the next thing I know, there's like wine bottles coming out of nowhere, and somebody got me a plaque, and somebody else had like was passing around a certificate for me that was celebrity to sign. And I was here going, I did what I do every Tuesday, but I appreciate it. You know, it's like
that same, like some of the things, like you said, not to turn it into a road down this, down nostalgia road. But that was the one where I turned the dragon's hair purple.
Oh, yeah.
I used a wand of a wonder.
Fucking purple hair.
Didn't hurt the dragon at all.
That was for fun.
A bunch of butterflies showed out. That was the result. And it's like, and the creature gains purple hair. And I'm like, well, that's what Taloon did.
Well, it turned his scales to purple.
Yes, and then when he polymorphed into a person, he had...
Whenever my dragons, the big major dragons that came, whenever I had them transform into polymorph into people, I always gave them colored hair, like their...
Scales,
and it was just for fun. But, like, that was the thing. Is like, you didn't know what had happened necessarily, and you guys had fled through a crevasse that he couldn't follow you through. So, of course, he polymorphed. So he could go through the crevice to chase you guys. And that was what you hear coming down the hall. It was like, purple king hair. It's just one of those hilarious moments.
That was the game where Prismatic Tsunami, at least the phrase, yes, Prismatic Tsunami,
yes,
came from. Because we were all standing in that front of a castle, our characters were. And one of the players, there was this ginormous army arrayed out across us, like Game of Thrones style out there. And
it was Jimmy. It was Jimmy.
You know, we had just leveled up recently, and my wizard had just learned Prismatic Wall. And they were like,
that's what Jimmy said.
And we were like, oh my God, we're so fucked. They're so fucked. There's so many people. And the thief turns to me, the player turns to me, the guy who's playing the thief goes, it's cool. We're good. I'm like, how are we good? How the fuck are we good? And he's like, you just learned Prismatic Wall. And I'm like, there's 10,000 fucking soldiers out there. We don't need a prismatic wall. We need a fucking prismatic tsunami.
I was blind, deaf, stunned, and stuck in Gehenna with 200 of my best friends. Tale of Prismatic Tsunami Survivor. Yes, folks, that's where it all began.
That is.
And that now it's over.
I was there.
So I appreciate you all dropping, but... So there's that approach. And I'm sure, whereas Kid doesn't probably focus a lot on specific character inspirations, I get the impression that you do a lot of internalizing to get to where you are with your characters.
I do. It's really creating the character inside my head as a separate being, and then kind of living their story to figure out where they're at and who they are. And then from there, it evolves naturally just through play. That's been my approach from day one, and although it's evolved and changed in ways, the core fundamental idea of it has never really varied much.
I feel like it's a lot like the skill that's evolved in writing a good character in prose, which
I agree, actually. That
can get out of hand, you know, sometimes. Can be unpredictable.
I've mentioned multiple times in our other show, Exposition Street, that one of the biggest and most important characteristics of any movie to me is the characters. And that's true in what I read and what I watch. It's even true in games I play if they happen to have that level of characterization as an option. It's just, you know, people fascinate me, especially from the inside. And I mean mentally, not physically.
Depends on which character you're talking about.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So yeah, that's kind of my approach to everything.
What a mess.
and one of the points I make there is that with writing, when I'm working on building the narrative in the story, the character will make a lot of determinations in how they interact with the scene, with the environment, with the other characters in the story. How they make decisions needs to come from a place that feels genuine, right? But when I'm writing, I have time to sort that out. You know, I can go over that for hours or days if I want to and figure out exactly how they're going to deal with something. Does this feel like it's in character? Is this a decision they're going to make? Is this consistent with their personality, their motives, their needs, their agenda? But also, does it provide important context for the story? Does it move?
Does it serve the story? Yeah.
Yes. Does it move something forward, or does it provide something pertinent to the reader? Because a lot of fluff is just not necessary. It's going to be a drawback. In a game, you have a little more leniency there, but it also can behoove you as a player. It behooves me as a player to try to remember how I can both execute characterization when I'm engaged in the story that my character's in and service the story. And there's one of the things, like, you'll see it sometimes. I was commenting about this. I was laughing about this just like yesterday. I was probably talking to one or both of you or all of you. I don't know. But we had the game session the other night where we had the very first session in a new game with new characters. And all five of the characters, I decided I'm not going to do they beat in a bar. I'm just not going to do they beat in a bar. I just don't feel like it right now, right? So Instead, it's going to be they meet on the street because something happens and they're all close enough to get drawn up into it.
We opted for they might die in an alley scenario.
Right. You know, so let's do that. Right. And it wasn't a direct attack on any of the characters. It was like an attack on some NPCs by some obviously bad people that needed the shit kicked out of them. So this all worked. Everybody gets involved in the fight. Some of them a little quicker than others, but everybody gets there. The fight takes most of the session. It's fine. We end up with some aftermath time. And the first thing that happens as soon as the fight is done and the crowds are gathering at the edges and the fuzz are running down the street is the party scatters. It's like, I don't know any of these fuckers. I'm gone. You know, it was. That didn't quite work the way I expected it to.
You just got that, Jason.
But I was really not expecting it, but it's fine. Because there wasn't anybody there who was acting out of character, quote unquote. There wasn't anybody there that was making decisions that didn't make sense in the moment. But it also wasn't all in service to the story. It's my job at that point to meet that halfway.
Which means the next day they all meet in a bar.
Right. So,
You're not wrong.
I mean, they've actually even started. I mean, they
interestingly
they
enough, unintentionally yeah, some of us are going to go the same to taverns. Bar. Yeah.
Well, there is. There's drinking there. So it's a twofer. We ended up losing sleep.
It's funny how easy it is.
But that was a good example of me trying to service the character and the not knowing anybody or what the hell is going on. Like, why would I get involved with these people?
Right.
You know, because I'm playing a rogue.
But you didn't totally extricate yourself either. You went down the street to kind of watch from a distance and got engaged in some conversation with an NPC or something.
I was trying not to break the story, but also
to serve your character.
Well, because you don't want to make it
serve the character.
You don't want to suddenly become irrelevant either. It's like, left. You guys are on your own.
The omnipotent gods of the woods?
I've spent the last 10 years by myself in the forest, but I'm going to hang out with you guys all of a sudden. Probably not.
Was that Bob the omnipotent god of the woods?
It's all about
irrelevant.
Yes.
And irrelevant the dwarf.
Irrelevant the dwarf.
Oh, wow. What an inside joke that one is. Fuck me. Okay. So that's a really good example, though. And I feel like you've gotten a really cool opportunity to see a lot to get into gaming with a lot of players, several players who are very into creating that space around their character and within their character. And everybody's different.
There's some ace players. Everybody's so
good. And that was intentional. That's intentional. This is curated. You know, most of my gaming groups are curated in some fashion. I want people that I know are going to have a good game together. When I've got somebody new coming in, I want to make sure that they have a chance to game with people that are really going to make it fun for everybody and showcase a style of play that they may find appealing or may find inspiring. It isn't meant to show anybody that's the right way to do anything, because unlike our first couple of years on Metagamers Anonymous, I don't necessarily believe there is one anymore. But
every type of game serves a different purpose.
Exactly.
And that's exactly it.
Well, I just hope you're enjoying it. And I appreciate you getting. I mean, obviously, it's cool to hang out with you. I don't necessarily know how much it surprised me when you decided you were going to get back into gaming, because I'd kind of been hinting at it for years.
And yeah, we talked about it a lot.
And you had other friends.
I couldn't.
The game?
Well, and the whole thing, too, is that I couldn't commit because I didn't want to half-ass it. You know, I want to phone it.
Right.
If I was going to commit, I wanted to really get into the game.
And I feel like there was a long time when you also felt like, you know, it's like, oh, you're talking about giving a night up every week, blah, 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 and I'm not there yet. I want to be a free agent.
Especially in the summertime around here.
Well, yeah, you like to do a lot of outdoor shit, you know. And, I mean, this may or may not be something that is that big a draw for you in the long run, but you obviously enjoy it. So I'm hoping you stick with it.
I'm not too worried about it. Yeah. You're not too worried about it. It's therapeutic for me, if nothing else.
That is the goal. No. Right, we're not allowed to say that. But it is an important dimension as a player to have that opportunity to explore ideas, constructs, experiences outside of yourself in a safe place that give you context for yourself. Yeah. I mean, it's the great thing about reading stories that you relate to, about watching movies you relate to, characters you relate to in any context. And I just want you to know, because I love you guys so much, that if I hadn't committed to podcasting with you this evening, I'd have been playing fucking Jedi Fallen Order Survivor because it came out on Game Pass. And I just found out before we went on the air, just so you know.
Hold on. Pardon me a moment. I got to go download something.
Yeah, I mean, right? It happens. It just so happens that Jonica and Nira walk into the room and Jonica's like bouncing on the tips of her toes to tell me this is the case. And I'm preparing for this and I take off my headphones. She tells me what's going on. And Nira immediately sits down and Jonica immediately sits down like she's going to hand me the controller because we all want to see the next game. And now they all had to wait until I'm done talking to you guys. What's that?
I said I couldn't get into that. It's because the character in it is. It's hard for me to play Jedi Shameless.
I like Cal. He's a cool character.
Cal's good, yeah.
Jedi Shameless.
Jedi, yeah, exactly.
I saw a photo of him recently. What is it? In a hug with. I can't remember her name now. She's a gal that played Morgan in Ahsoka. She's like a bad guy, the witch.
Oh, yeah.
He was a senator or whatever.
I don't remember her name either.
Yeah, the actress is cool. I like her, but it was so funny. It's like, wait, there's something weird going on here. Oh, yeah, he's not live action in the Star Wars has gotten so big. It's so much going on there. Mm-hmm. Such a big world. And we still, and several of us still talk about things that happened in the legacy expanded universe like it's still part of the story, because for us it is. And there's an entire community out there that wants to see Mara Jade. It's hard not to be one of those people, even though I don't think she's got any place in the new paradigm because, you know, Luke's gone now, too.
Yeah, it got pretty washed out.
You know, and unlike a lot of people, I'm not bitching because I'm fine with the movies. I mean,
I'm okay with not having Mara Jade as long as we get Grandmaster Sabath.
And we might. I don't know. We got
Thrawn.
So, I mean, and just that was surprising. You know,
right.
Just the name gives me chills.
But and I like him. I really liked the way they portrayed him in Rebels. And
Rebels was a much better version of that character.
Well, it felt like we got to see more development in his element there. So there's going to be stuff. There's going to be things that happen, and I'm all in on that. seeing what they come up with. I know there's a lot of very unhappy fans out there, and I feel for them. I really do. I appreciate everybody's consternation over everything that's happened since Disney took over the franchise, and how different a direction things have gone than people wanted it to, and how much they don't like some of the choices that have been made. And I'm okay. I'm good with what they've given me. It's not all perfect, but it's never all been perfect for me.
I'm still waiting for the crossover where I can see Darth Vader versus Captain America.
Is he punching my ship?
I can do this all day.
Darn, that was marvelous Star Trek crossover.
yes, it was the Gladiator. Is he punching my ship?
There's the episode title. Thank you for joining us for episode number 296 of Metagamers Anonymous. Getting on out of here for tonight. Once again, my name is Eric.
I'm Brian.
I'm Brendan.
And I'm still the kid.
Yes, indeed you are. Good night, everybody.